Well, good morning. In our quiet time last night, we were looking at the episode in King David's life where the ark is returned back to his people and he dances with reckless abandon, unapologetically. And I think I just saw that here during the kids' song. So it's great to see kids rejoicing in their God. So please join me as I pray. Father, this morning we want to praise you, not just for the salvation that we are given through Jesus, but for the example that we are given in Jesus. For he shows us what it truly means to be a human being. For no one was more loving, more serving, more humble, more giving, more patient and more forgiving than he was and is. So use your word this morning to help us to live like him, for him, that we may point others to him. Amen. Well, hands up if you can remember reading these. If you can remember reading books from the Choose Your Own Adventure series. Yes, I can see there's a few here who are as old as me. When I was a kid, I used to love reading these things. They became a really big thing. And so for those that are looking a little confused at the moment, a little unfamiliar, let me fill you in. Back in the 80s and 90s, they became extremely popular because they were written from the perspective of the second person. So what does that mean? They were written in a way so that, get this, you, the reader, are actually the main character. You are the book's protagonist. As you read, you get to make choices that determine the plot's outcome. Because the book's designed to keep letting you decide the developing storyline. And so let me give you an example from one of these, and you'll have to bear with me because, or bear with the names, because this is 30 years ago, America. Now there's Randy, Mary Sue, and there's you. And you're all on a raft that's headed straight for a waterfall, so what do? Because Mary Sue is injured, and it's no good asking Randy because he's already proven to be not much good at anything, and so it's up to you, the protagonist. What do you choose to do? Do you A, try and use Randy as a makeshift paddle to reach the shore and throw him overboard? If you choose that option, turn to page 20. Or B, on the overhead branch, do you grab hold of that snake and try and winch all of you to safety? If you choose that option, turn to page 26. Or C, do you just go for broke, head straight towards the drop and try and survive by heading straight off? And if you choose that option, you may as well head straight to the prologue. Now, the great thing about these books is they put you, the reader, in the box seat. You get to choose from a bunch of options, and depending on which one you choose, the author will go on to show you how each one ends up. And as you may have guessed, some options are better than others. As a kid, I could never help myself. I'd choose one and read that, then I'd flip back and read how all the other ones end up as well. And so that's Choose Your Own Adventure. And I read that apparently the Fox Network are trying to bring them back by turning them into an app. And so the reason I mention this blast from the past is because Solomon's doing something very similar today. For today, he's going to let all of you choose your own adventure. In Ecclesiastes 4, he has given you a bunch of options of some of the different kinds of people you can choose to be. In verses 4 through 16, he lists a bunch of different kinds of the people, like an envious person, a foolish person, a greedy person, a workaholic and a team player, or a friend, as it was said in the kids' talk, and an influencer. He lists this bunch of different personality types that are still alive and well in the world today, as if to say, pick which one you want to be. Today you get to choose, and when you do, I will show you your future. In other words, today you get to choose your own adventure. You all get to choose the kind of person that you want to be in life, and Solomon will show you how choosing that option will affect your storyline. Because the kind of person you choose to be, it largely determines the kind of life you are going to live. So choose wisely. You often hear it said that who we are is shaped by our circumstances, that we're shaped by the cards that we're dealt with, or as one of you told me from a book that you've been reading this week, that we are products of our environment. And while that is absolutely true, today Solomon says it also works the other way too. That the kinds of people we are largely determines how we end up. Which is why some who have a great upbringing can still go off the rails, while some who have a tough upbringing are somehow able to beat the odds and rise above. Perhaps ancient philosopher Heraclitus put it best when he said, "A person's character is their fate." Which is why what Solomon has to say is so helpful today, because while choosing your own adventure in fiction can be fun, it is not fun when you get it wrong in non-fiction. For in real life, when you choose, you're not merely playing a game. No, you are playing for sheep stations. For if you choose to be the wrong kind of person, or to befriend or perhaps even marry them, then the consequences can be devastating. Again, which is why what Solomon writes is so helpful today, for it can help us avoid making these devastating mistakes. So are all you ready? Here we go. You know, you, Mary Sue and Randy, now you all get to choose your own adventure. Well, the first kind of person we're given by Solomon is not the best option. And that option is given to us in verse 4 when he mentions envy. He says, "And I saw that all toil and all achievement springs from one person's envy of another." And so let me ask, have you ever met an envious person? Have you ever been an envious person? Have you ever looked at what someone else had and thought, "I want that"? If you have, be careful. For Solomon says in verse 4, envy can completely take over if you let it have a foothold. It can become an all-consuming, one and only motive. In verse 4, he says, all of your toil and achievement will be motivated by it, motivated by the disparity you see when you compare yourself to other people. Envious people, they can't see everything they do have, for they can't take their eyes off everything they don't have. Envious people aren't motivated by simply trying to get ahead. They are motivated by trying to outdo everyone else. Envious people aren't motivated by the creed, "How can I bless and serve?" They are motivated by the creed, "That is what I deserve." Envious people aren't capable of having good relations with co-workers, neighbours, family or friends because they view everyone else as a competitive threat. Envious people can only give a superficial smile when something good happens to others in life because the fact that it did kills them inside. It was American author and playwright Gore Vidal who once said, "Every time one of my friends succeeds, a part of me dies." That's sad, but friends, that is the language of envy. Envious people not only tend to become cold, bitter, and spiteful, they also become extremely frustrated in life because envy ensures they never arrive. And the fact that it's what drives all of their toil means everything they achieve or acquire is totally undermined. Which is why Solomon warns at the end of verse 4, envy is not a good option. Choosing to be envious is a meaningless wind-chasing exercise. And under the mystery of God's providence, chances are he's placed at least one of these people in your extended family, your workplace, or your community. And if you're really blessed, he may have even placed at least one of these in all three. And if he has, then as I heard someone say recently, don't waste it, see it as a growth opportunity. Or if you're a person who really struggles with envy, know, of course, that Jesus is the remedy. For knowing Jesus means knowing everything you have is God's good gift, not something you deserve or use to compete with. Knowing Jesus means, like the Apostle Paul, being content regardless of whether we have a lot or a little. In Philippians 4, Paul says he discovered the secret, and of course, the secret is Jesus. Knowing who we have and what we have in Jesus means having the strength to be content in everything. In other words, Jesus is the one-stop shop on how to get rid of envy. Knowing Jesus means using what we have to ask, how can I use this to bless you? Instead of asking, how can I use this to be better than you? For no one shows us better than Jesus and what he did on the cross that it truly is more blessed to give than receive. Which is precisely what he says in Acts 20. Which leads me to Solomon's next option, option B, the fool. And by fool here, Solomon refers to those who are lazy. That's what he means. For in verse 5, he says, a fool is someone who folds their hands. And so a fool here is someone who refuses to work. And I know that there are health reasons why some people don't work, like poor physical or mental health or some other circumstance, and I get that. But sometimes it's none of the above. Sometimes it's simply because they are slothful. It is not because they can't work, it is because they won't work. Rather than use their hands, they fold their hands. That's what they choose to do. And Solomon says, choosing that is foolish. For in verse 5, choosing to fold one's hands is choosing to bring about one's own ruin. Well, I remember hearing life coach Tony Robbins once say, there is no such thing as lazy people. There is just people who have impotent goals that don't inspire them. And to that Solomon says, you can rephrase it however you want, but how about avoiding ruin. How's that for a goal in life? Hopefully that is enough to inspire. Lazy people refuse to accept what the rest of the world gets, that if you want something in life, you've got to work for it. Period. You know, even those who are born with a silver spoon, if they refuse to work, then it is only a matter of time before they lose it. It is only a matter of time before they come to ruin, because the only thing lazy people are willing to produce are more excuses. Have you ever met someone like that? I've known plenty. I have known plenty of people who ruin themselves through inaction. In fact, there was a season when I could have become a fool myself in my mid to late teens. Until my old school dad walked into the room and said, "Let me put it to you real simple. If you don't work, you don't eat. Are we clear?" "Yes, sir." And I got a job later that same week. It is the best thing he could have done. It is one of the reasons, you know, why I love my dad so much, because he saved me from ruin with some tough love. But sadly, a lot of lazy people don't listen to or believe Solomon when he says they ruin themselves. Now, whenever I come across someone like this, usually I hear them say words to the effect that the price of getting out there and trying is more than I am willing to pay. You know, the price of trying is far too high. And so what I try and do is to show them how the price that they are already paying for not trying is just so much higher. It is so much higher than they usually realize. And so even though it feels much more comfortable and safe, you know, staying in bed, watching TV, gaming or surfing the net, Solomon says it is not safe. Being lazy is actually a grave situation of danger where you yourself are the enemy you face. In Proverbs 22, the sluggard says this: "There's a lion outside. I will be killed in the streets." But Solomon says, "No, there's not. The danger is not out there. It is in here. It is in this room. For the truth is, the lion is you. You are the one who will bring about your own ruin." In Ecclesiastes 4:5, the Hebrew word Solomon used for ruin is literally to eat or to devour. And how do they do that? Well, as lazy people start to see everyone else getting ahead, it leads to depression and poor mental health. And what's more, as they lean on everyone else, it will strain all of their relationships, because everyone else has to carry them financially and emotionally and practically, you name it. And as they do, it leads to more and more heated arguments, disappointment, frustration, and eventually isolation. Their lives and their potential and their relationships are increasingly swallowed up one by one, and they are the ones who are responsible. Choosing to be foolish is never a good option, even though it feels like you are taking life easy. It is one of the fastest ways to reach the prologue, which brings us to Solomon's next option, which is greed. And the simplest definition of a greedy person, could be the same, is someone who wants to keep more than they need. And it's in verse 6 that Solomon gives you greed as an option. He says, "Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind." And so it's like a cookie jar, right? I mean, who loves cookies? Me too. In verse 6, life's like a cookie jar where if you put one hand in, you can easily pull out a cookie. But if you put both hands in to try and grab more, you get stuck. And so you have to use a lot of force, or to use Solomon's language, two hands leads to toil. Which is why greed is like chasing after the wind. It is counterproductive. Because even though greed wants more so it can be at ease, you know, the reality is it never is, because with greed there is no tranquility. I remember when I was at uni, one of the assignments that I was given was to research the factors that caused all of the major financial crises in the last 50 years. That was a fun assignment. And so I researched these for weeks and weeks, but in hindsight, I didn't need to spend all that much time on it, because what I came to discover was they were all caused by one thing. Greed. Greed lies behind every global financial crisis. Greed motivates a school kid to try and cut in line, or a sibling to take the bigger slice. Greed thinks that it's okay to embezzle foreign aid away from those who will otherwise die. You know, greed will rip families apart that have loved each other deeply their whole lives. Solomon is right. Wherever there is greed, there is only two hands full of toil. There is no tranquility. And for anyone who struggles with this, the opposite of greed is, of course, generosity. And in 2 Corinthians 8, we are told this is how to become more generous. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that through his poverty you might become rich. So how does this help us to become more generous? Well, Paul says that the way that we become more generous is to keep looking at the cross. To keep looking at how much Christ has given us, and don't stop looking at that until it frees us up to give like he did. Which is why the cure for greed is Jesus. For no one has given more generously than he did. And that leads us to Solomon's next option, the workaholic. In verse 7, Solomon says, "Again, I saw something meaningless under the sun." And so he's moving on to the next option, and I think by now we're up to option D, the workaholic. Now, don't mishear me. It is a good thing to work hard, but Solomon warns that you can take it too far. Verse 8. "There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth." So he has neither a son nor a brother, but does he have a wife? We're not told. If he did, you can bet that she barely got to see him, as he spends all of his time in meetings, punching out 70-hour weeks. But one night, as he's heading home, you know, late from the office in the car, all of a sudden it hits him like a ton of bricks in the middle of verse 8 when he asks, "For whom am I toiling?" In other words, why am I doing this? Why am I working so hard? I mean, it's already been said, it's because my eyes aren't content with my wealth. So apparently I'm doing this for myself, but what's the point if I don't get any time to actually enjoy it? Now, what's the point in doing it to get more when I miss out on so much in the process, when the reality of working for more and more gain is actually self-deprivation? It's crazy. Commentator Phil Ryken shares a story about a guy who worked himself into the grave at a young age. I think it was reported in his local newspaper. At age 51, the guy died of a coronary thrombosis, which the medicos here would know meant that he probably died from work-related stress and not having enough time to do regular exercise. His family and friends said at work that he had been under so much pressure, he had literally worked himself to death. And when someone said to his wife at the funeral, "I'm sure you will really miss him," his wife answered, "I already have been for years." I remember sitting with Nell one day when she gave me some wise advice, which she does every time, and I'll share it with you guys. She said that if you keep burning the candles at both ends, eventually it burns in the middle. Which in verse 8 is what Solomon calls a miserable business. And those of you who work for yourselves or run your own business or occupy senior positions are at most risk when it comes to this. And so don't end up another sad statistic. There is no point constantly working if it means depriving yourself and the people you love of enjoyment. Solomon says it is meaningless. It is an unhappy business, which leads me to the next option, which is much more positive, the team player or friend in verses 9 through 12. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other. But pity anyone who falls, who has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. And in verse 9, Solomon says two are better than one because two are much more productive. And they're more productive because when it comes to good friends, they provide rescue, warmth, and protection in the ensuing verses. Ever fallen over in life and had a good friend come and pick you up? Hopefully, me too. Because good friends come to the rescue. You know, when life knocks you down and you get stuck, good friends are very similar to a pickup truck. And they don't just provide rescue, they also provide warmth. In verse 11, I don't think Solomon here is talking about friends with benefits. He's talking about when ancient people had to travel through winter, they'd often rest lying back to back to help retain body heat. For before central heating and polar fleece, you know, hypothermia, it was a serious issue. And Proverbs 18 talks about friends who stick closer than a brother. And it's a great mental image for a good friendship because good friends have the ability to warm each other up, to stay close and help one another endure life's difficult seasons. You know, whenever life gets cold for whatever reason, it's great to have some really good friends that can make you laugh and cheer you up to help you get through that winter. And in verse 12, good friends also offer protection. Now, if you happen to be in a fight, you might be able to overpower one person, but unless you're Bruce Lee, you're not going to beat two or three. Friends have each other's back. They help strengthen each other when one's under attack, which is why every one of you needs to have some really good friends. And yes, this also goes for the introverts. And if you struggle to make friends, then let me give you some advice from the first half of the proverb that I just mentioned. The first half of Proverbs 18:24 from the New King James, which says, "A man who has friends must himself be friendly." In other words, the best way to have good friends is to be a good friend. And how do you be a good friend? Well, Solomon just told you, through providing rescue, warmth, and protection. Now, being a good friend is definitely a good option. It is how you help one another reach good endings. Choosing good friends and choosing to be a good friend is one of the best ways that you can choose your own adventure, which brings us to our last option for today, which I like to call the influencer. Influencer, as in the type you might see posting selfies on Instagram and social media. You know, someone who makes a living from fame and celebrity, which I get from verses 13 through 16, and some of you are probably wondering, how on earth does he get that? Well, let me explain how I get this. In verses 13 through 16, Solomon tells a story about a wise youth and an old fool that a lot of people find a little cryptic. The old king is past his prime and he's no longer listening, while the wise youth is a story of from rags to riches. He starts out poor or in prison, yet he becomes everyone's hero and ascends to the kingship. In 15, perhaps he was on Facebook or Instagram because Solomon says all who lived followed him. At least they did for a while until, like his predecessor, he disappears into the pages of history. Because in 16, the next generation, those who came later, they weren't pleased with him, the young guy who's the successor. And this keeps repeating again and again. At the start of 16, then there's no end to it. You know, individual after individual, they rise up, but irrespective of how high they rise or how long they hold on, eventually every one of them disappears into the pages of history. Everyone who becomes the next big thing will also become yesterday's news and disappear. Which is why Solomon says it's meaningless. So why does he finish with this? You know, why does he tell us about these two kings in 13 through 16? Well, here is what I think he means. Here is what I think is this little story's big idea. Fame is fleeting. Fame is fleeting because people change their allegiances, and oftentimes they change them quickly, which is why it makes no sense at all to be narcissistic. It makes no sense merely living for fame and popularity or celebrity, because like the old fool and the wise youth, one day yours will be gone too. Friends, we live in a crazy, crazy age. You know, an age where some people do nothing more than post images of themselves online to make a living. An age where people ruin their lives by marrying complete strangers they've never met before on TV because they are desperate to try and get a profile. An age where young people film themselves taking increasingly dangerous risks, hoping to get a following on YouTube and social media. And even if they're one of the few who do, Solomon says, eventually it will prove to you that it is meaningless. It is meaningless to live for popularity because fame is fleeting. It is only a matter of time before you too disappear into the pages of history. And the same thing will happen to the next big thing that comes after you. It always has and it always will. Which is why you should never allow your value to be determined by how popular you are or how high you happen to rise. It should only ever be determined by one thing and one thing only, the fact that Jesus died. That God would love you so much it cost Jesus his life, which is why your value should only ever be determined by that price. So friends, there you have it. There is Solomon's options. There's a bunch of the different kinds of people you can choose to be and how each one of them ends up. And the truth is that in our experience that these options, they don't tend to be mutually exclusive. Because there are times, different times in our lives when we struggle with each of these. Now, for instance, there are times where we work too much, and there are times where we probably don't work enough. There are times when we choose to be a good friend, and there are times when we prove to be a really bad friend. There'll be times in our life when we struggle with envy, greed, and our desire to be popular, and there'll be times when we're extremely humble and generous. And the key in trying to get it right most of the time is by submitting to Jesus. He is the one who needs to be the main character, the protagonist in our lives, which is why he says to every one of us, to the whole world, follow me. Following Jesus is the best way to choose your own adventure, for if you've read the Bible, you know that's how the story ends in heaven. Friends, let's pray.